It's 6:20. This is KERA News. I'm Justin Martin. Governor Greg Abbott is calling state lawmakers back to the Capitol for a special session. First, lawmakers must resolve so-called sunset legislation that's required to keep open certain state agencies like the Texas Medical Board. Abbott told reporters this afternoon that a special session was entirely avoidable and says the 30-day summer session is about completing unfinished business.
The special session will begin on July 18th. The first order of business will be sunset legislation that failed to pass during the regular session. This is necessary legislation.
The governor says no other legislation will be considered during the special session until Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, who presides over the Texas Senate, passes a sunset bill.
After the sunset legislation passes out of the Senate, the following 19 items will be added immediately to the special session for the House and Senate to vote on.
Among those 19 items, a so-called bathroom bill that would regulate which restrooms transgender people can use. Other special session items are related to education, including school finance reform and teacher pay increases. Several education-related bills did cross the finish line during the legislative session that wrapped up last week. Reporters from across the state are bringing us the highlights. We start with KERA's Christina Martinez on a bill that changes who can get suspended from school.
House Bill 674 bans out-of-school suspension statewide for pre-K through second graders, except in cases involving drugs, weapons, or violence. Here's Dallas Democrat Eric Johnson making the case for his bill on the House floor.
Our youngest children need to be in school and need to be disciplined in a way that allows them to continue to be educated.
Some urban school districts, like Austin, have already banned the practice among its youngest students. Dallas will implement its own policy next school year. Jalen Hempel is a coordinator for AVID, the college readiness program at L.V. Stockard Middle School in Dallas. The school changed their suspension policies and added what's known as restorative practices.
We made sure that each classroom had a contract between the teacher and the students on what behaviors were expected and what the students expected of the teacher as well, so that there was a level of trust that we could all work from.
He says since then, Stockard's reduced not only the number of suspensions, but also the number of repeat kids getting suspended. Now, from the Texas Station Collaborative, Jen Rice has more on one bill that died, only to rise again as an amendment.
DeSoto Democrat Helen Giddings overcame major challenges this session before lawmakers finally passed her legislation to reform public school lunch shaming. That's when schools take a meal away from a student if the student's account balance has reached zero. Sometimes that means throwing the food out and leaving students hungry and humiliated in front of classmates. Giddings explained lunch shaming to her fellow lawmakers by reading a painful letter she received from a teacher who witnessed it firsthand.
One of my four-year-olds slid her meal tray down to the cashier in order to pay for her meal. But instead, what she heard was an emphatic, "You have no money," followed by the removal of her meal tray.
Opponents of the bill, like Freedom Caucus member Jonathan Stickland, said it will cost schools money. The bill died in the House. But Giddings wasn't done yet. She figured there's more than one way to pay a lunch bill. She partnered with Feeding Texas to create a public crowdfunding website for donations. Ultimately, Giddings attached the bill as an amendment to a Senate bill that did make it to Governor Abbott's desk. Now students will have a grace period policy that will give students more credit or allow a negative balance on their account. Also this session, higher education fared better than many thought it would. Houston Public Media's Andrew Schneider explains.
Texas University spent much of the legislative session under the threat of steep funding cuts. Between 2003 and 2016, tuition and fees climbed nearly 150%. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick responded at a press conference in April of last year.
People did not send us here to Austin to allow our universities to raise tuitions five times higher than their salaries.
Enter Senate Bill 19. The bill would have frozen tuition and fees at state schools for the next 4 years. With revenues down, there was a strong expectation the budget would slash state spending on higher education as well.
I think the higher ed institutions came out much better than they had anticipated they might.
Austin Democrat Donna Howard is on the House Higher Education Committee. She's pleased that SB 19 died in the House, and she notes that in the end, the budget included a slight increase for higher ed spending. I'm Andrew Schneider in Houston with
Jen Rice in Austin
and Christina Martinez in Dallas.
On Tuesdays, KERA's One Crisis Away project looks at life on the financial edge. Today, a peek inside a program trying to help families think beyond a single crisis and make real plans for the future. Catholic Charities Fort Worth launched its Padua program just over 2 years ago. It's named for St. Anthony of Padua, who was devoted to the sick and poor. KERA's Courtney Collins sat down with Corinne Weaver of Catholic Charities to look at the early results.
Corinne Weaver, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
First of all, how is the Padua approach to helping families in need different from what Catholic Charities has always done?
The Padua pilot, when it was originally being designed, we actually called it Whatever It Takes, and that was the working title, and it really kind of helps sum up the difference in the approach because we wanted to launch a program that really addressed families' needs holistically and over the long term to truly end poverty one family at a time.
What are some of the things people initially come into Catholic Charities with, and then what are some of the other problems that Padua helps unlock?
So clients can come to Catholic Charities for a variety of reasons. Most likely, it's for help with a more concrete, tangible need. So sometimes it's with paying a utility bill or rent assistance, transportation, or you know, somebody's looking for a job, a better job. And Padua then took them beyond some of those shorter term needs and really helped them with life. Always, we have a goal within the Padua pilot of helping clients get to a level of financial self-sufficiency, which we define as a living wage job, 3 months worth of savings at a living wage rate, and then no bad credit harming negative debt.
You have some early results. Talk to me about people sticking with Padua.
So we learned that within our first year, our Padua participants, over 60% of them actually stayed in the program for a year or more. We tend to see more of like a 30% retention rate after a year. And so in Padua, we've more than doubled that number.
What about savings and income goals? How do Padua clients compare to traditional clients there?
So after the first year, we were really pleasantly surprised to learn that the Padua pilot treatment group clients was what we call them in the research world. They were actually looking really positive compared to the control group in terms of labor market outcomes, such as the employment rate, their hourly wages, the percentage of clients that were engaged in full-time work. We actually saw an increase in monthly earnings. We are looking at about a $280 increase for the Padua treatment group when compared to the control group.
Will there be any changes to the program as a result of what's been learned so far?
So when we first launched the program, we had a very intentional effort to do an intensive holistic initial assessment process. And we believe that was really important for getting to know our clients well, really establishing rapport with them, understanding their needs as a whole family. That process was 7 visits when we first launched the program. And very quickly, we got some feedback from our case management teams that was a bit too long. Some of the clients felt an impatience to kind of get going and to get moving, maybe felt like they were talking about themselves a little too much, and they weren't really used to that. And so in year 2 of the pilot, we tightened that process up, and it averaged at 4 visits instead of 7 in year 2.
I know this is a hard question to answer, but overall, do you think Padua's working?
I do. At the end of the day, both our experience working with our clients and the preponderance of the results we've received really show that this program has an immense amount of progress. And I can honestly say there's nothing I've done in my professional life that I've been more proud to be a part of.
Corinne Weaver with Catholic Charities Fort Worth, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
Coming up tomorrow morning, domestic violence victims are often women, but not only women. Overall, nearly 40% of Texas women and 30% of Texas men, or 1 in 3 Texas adults, report having experienced intimate partner violence in their lifetimes. In many cities, men haven't had their own place for emergency shelter. A Dallas nonprofit has opened a shelter exclusively for battered men and their families. Learn about the shelter tomorrow morning at 8:22 during Morning Edition. Mostly cloudy skies expected later tonight, a low around 69. Tomorrow should be mostly sunny with a high around 87. It's 6:30. This is KERA News.